history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you. They won't claim that title for themselves, but we can certainly ascribe it once we take the time to listen to some of the things they went through for the sake of our country. The idea here is to honor our veterans for their service and their sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we do so, we learn quite a bit. We're educated, we're entertained, and often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This doesn't happen too often on Hometown Heroes, but every once in a while we run into a story that just isn't going to fit into one episode of the show, so we have to carry it over. If you missed last time, you can find the whole podcast at hometownheroesradio.com. But we're talking to Lawson Sakai of Morgan Hill, California, who served with the 442nd Regimental Combat Team in Europe during World War II. We heard about how he and his Japanese-American family were forced from their Southern California home in the months that followed the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, how he tried to enlist in the Navy only to be told he was ineligible because of his ancestry. Later, he even spent a month in the Navy's V-12 program as a student before they discovered his Japanese heritage. And finally, in 1943, the formation of the 442nd gave him the opportunity to serve. We heard about the rescue of the Lost Battalion, that unit surrounded by German forces in France's Vosges Mountains in October 1944, and then eventually rescued by the Japanese Americans of the 442 at a very heavy cost. We're going to hear the rest of Mr. Sakai's story today, and even hear from one of the men he helped rescue. But let's start out with something that maybe you caught a little of last time, Lawson Sakai's description of the conditions he faced in the Vosges Mountains and how a German shell knocked him out of commission 2 days before that rescue was complete.
The weather was so bad, and of course we didn't have winter clothing, and we're soaking wet from the rain, and the hills were muddy. We're in the Vosges Mountains, the thickest forest that we'd ever been in. And the Germans had the 88-millimeter anti-aircraft weapon, lowered it down, and started shooting it at the infantry. That sound of that 88 going off and exploding, that shrill sound coming, is something that I've never heard duplicated in movies or anything. It's just mind-shattering. I mean, when it comes directly at you, wow, you know, it just, the sound itself is enough to blow you apart. But when it would hit these trees, branches would come off. Sometimes half of a tree would come falling, weighing maybe 1,000 pounds. A lot of guys got crushed. And the morning that I got hit, the 28th of October, we're going to mount a real strong attack at daybreak. And the Germans probably sensed that we were, because we had had a big battle on the 27th. We gained the high ground. We dug in as best we could. That early that morning, the barrage came in, probably lasted 20, 25 minutes, maybe more. I don't know. Maybe 100 rounds, just bang, 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 just continuously. We were pinned down. You couldn't move. We had a lot of casualties right at that time. And, of course, when I got it, well, I thought I was dead, so I was out of it. But
I imagine you had probably had some close calls before that.
Yeah, I got wounded twice in Italy and then once before in France. So, but they weren't that bad, you know.
Well, define that, because you say, yeah, I got wounded once. Well, yeah, and most people have never been wounded, period. So when you say weren't that bad, what do you mean?
You know, I got patched up and I could go back a day or two. Mm-hmm. But the last time, the shrapnel that got me in, if it came straight through, it would have blown a hole through me, but it came in at an angle, so it wrapped around in my ribs here. Oh, that was really painful. It just, you know, a red-hot piece of steel in there, and it just, your body just gives way. It just curl up and you can't breathe. And I was sure I was dead. I remember I told the medic, just let me die right there. And he pumped me full of morphine, because when I woke up, I was on a train, on a litter. They were going to the American Hospital in Dijon, which is not too far away, for surgery. And I don't know how I survived that one. But guys were getting killed left and right, you know. Mostly the barrage from the artillery, just an awful shattering of not only the artillery shell, but the tree trunks and limbs coming down. In Italy, we had a few vineyards, a few olive orchards. Most of the hills were bare. Got to France and eastern France, and all of a sudden this huge forest that we had to go through. The Germans were already entrenched, dug in, so we had to go into the forest, dig them out.
You're going into a meat grinder.
Yeah.
What about your recovery? How long did it take to recover from those wounds?
About 3 months, but not too long after October 30, when the 211 men were rescued, Dahlquist pushed the 442nd for another 4 or 5 days before he let them come off the line.
Right.
We had so few men left. I think I Company had 8 out of 250 or so.
8 out of 250.
Yeah. I think our company, E Company, had probably the most. From what I heard, we had about 40 men left. But the 442nd really couldn't do much in it. They're just depleted. So they were sent to southern France, between Italy and France, and a hillside where, like the Maginot Line, they had fortresses built. And the duty was to guard the French-Italian border and the port cities of Cannes, Nice, and that area, patrol all of that. They called it the Champagne Campaign because there was very little battle going on. But there was a few. One of my friends, Sakamoto from the Valley, he got killed there. I think he's about the only one that was killed during that time. Mm-hmm. And the 442nd was there like from the middle of November till April. And that's a time when all these young kids, now the Army changed the designation back to 1A because of what the 442nd was doing. Mm-hmm. So they made them all eligible for the draft and were being drafted. And they were being trained at Camp Shelby. So after about 6 months, they were sent over, and they came in en masse to fill up the 442nd again.
Right. It needed a lot of filling up because of how devastated it was. With those 3 months of recovery for you, were there ever days where you weren't sure you were going to make it? Or you weren't sure you were going to be yourself again?
No, I was in good shape after the surgery. A little painful, of course. But
did you have broken ribs?
Nothing broke. It just... a lot of muscle tear, which is pretty bad.
And there are a lot of internal organs inside your rib cage. I mean, there's a lot of damage that could have been done there.
It didn't go in. It didn't come through. It went around. Mm-hmm. So it just, you know, just luck.
The angle was everything.
Yeah. Just luck.
Was it luck or was somebody looking out for you?
I don't know. You see guys that... they get hit square in the head with a bullet. Jeez. You know.
Well, here's the other thing that strikes me. Your injury, which almost killed you. I mean, we're talking inches probably from killing you. But now you're, how old are you? 92? Mm-hmm. 92, and you're in better shape than I am.
I don't know about that.
Wearing your 442 belt buckle here today. Looking sharp. But had you not been wounded that day, 442 has... a couple more days of combat before they liberate the Lost Battalion, and a lot more guys died in those 2 days.
That's right.
Is it possible that getting wounded when you did could have saved your life?
Very, very likely. From what some of the guys told me, the day that I got hit, after the barrage, they made their way forward, but they had a tough time. That was the 29th, 28th. The next day is the 29th. They could hear firepower. But it was not coming at them. So they knew that must be where the Americans were trapped, because the Germans were shooting at them. So now that, you know, the incentive is to get going. They knew they had to get going. So the 29th and 30th, when they broke through on the 30th, that was really a bloody, what we call bonsai charges. I don't know if you understand that word.
Well, but yeah. Usually you hear it associated
all
with
all-out charge,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And in fact, a couple of weeks ago, I was in Denver for the memorial service for Joe Sakato, who was the last of our 21 Medal of Honor awards. And I spoke at his service, and he tells how he went goofy and made that bonsai charge, you know, and just went crazy. But that's what they had to do to make that last charge to get through, break through. But so there were a lot of casualties in that last day or so.
Including him.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you brought Joe up because I had
his,
him.
He got his on the 29th.
Yeah. And so the implication is you could have been one of those and might not be here today. But you bring up Joe Sakato. I interviewed him in Denver a few years ago. And one thing he said, I thought of this when you mentioned you're 5'9", because he talked about being 5'4", and he thought being short saved his life because of all the close calls he had that went right over his head.
You know, when we first got into, we were very green when we went overseas. And so, and there was actually early July, like July 2, 3, 4, when we got together with the 100th Battalion who had been coming up the coast of Italy. And so after Rome, we grouped together as one full regiment. And the first day of battle, we go in an area, a kind of a low area, and Captain Ensminger, our CO, leads us through, and everything's pretty quiet, no shooting. And all of a sudden, from the high side and both sides, Germans start shooting down at us. And, you know, everybody's scattering. They don't know which way to go. And finally, we find a low and a high area that we could get behind. And the 4th Platoon starts setting up mortars and machine gun. Captain Ensminger gets shot in the head and gets killed the first day. I was in the 4th Platoon then. Lieutenant Zukowski, my platoon leader, gets killed the first day. They called the 100th back, and they replaced us. They came in, we withdrew, and the 100th wiped out the German force. So, you know, but that's how our baptism of fire, the first thing I can remember. It was a dry day, open field, and I could see the specks of dust, and there was a burp gun aiming toward us, and, you know, the specks are like this, and all of a sudden you hear the burp, and the burp gun is short-handled, high velocity, and it lifts up.
Right.
So it lifted up right over our heads.
Wow. So you saw it coming right in front of you, and then like a bubble around you, it goes over your head.
What the hell's that dust? You know, the dust is flying, all of a sudden you hear this like popping noise as the bullets go flying by. Oh, we learned a lot the first day.
I guess so. And all the way throughout, but you're surrounded throughout your time over there by death, by devastation. How did you deal with that? How did you keep going when your friends and people you knew were dying around you?
Well, we had to advance. You know, we kept advancing, so we just casualties left and right, but you just keep going.
Did you rejoin the 442 when you got out of the hospital?
Yes.
And that was the fourth time you'd been wounded?
Yeah.
But you didn't get to come home?
No.
Did you want to come home?
I guess I wasn't wounded that bad. Like some guy, you know, if they lost a leg or lost an eye or arm, they would always get shipped back to Battle Creek, Michigan or someplace.
Right.
But I guess a lot of us were wounded like I was in the ward that I was in. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of healing. And we're, you know, they figured we're ambulatory, get up and walk, so go back. And, you know, we still didn't have replacements, so we had to go back.
No choice.
You know.
And was your family back home aware of what had happened to you?
I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I wrote a few letters to my sister, but I never wrote to my parents. But My sister, I'm sure, probably told them.
It's time for us to take our first break. Remember, you can find photos, videos, and links to more information about Mr. Sakai and all the other veterans who appear on this program at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Radio page on Facebook. When we come back, we're going to hear about what Lawson Sakai did after recovering from his injuries and returning to the 442nd, and also the unique way in which he encountered one of those lost battalion soldiers he had helped to rescue. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.